Hi, I'm Michelle Chalfant, psychotherapist, holistic life coach, and human just like you, learning to navigate life challenges. With over 25 years experience, I teach people how to get healthy using the adult chair model. The adult chair model is where simple psychology meets grounded spirituality, and it teaches us how to become healthy adults. From anxiety and depression to codependency and relationship issues, you can use the adult chair for just about anything. Each week, I share practical tips, tools, and advice from myself and a wide range of experts on how to get unstuck, how to live authentically, and how to truly love yourself, all while sitting in your adult chair. Welcome to the Adult Chair Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first of six summer series. These are your favorite shows, and I'm delighted to be here with you again with one of your favorites and mine. She's my girl. I love this girl, Sylvie Kakousian. She is an attachment expert, and we talked all about attachment. This show is jam-packed with information, and I know you're going to love it. Yeah. I don't even want to say anything else. Just wait for the show. We had a ton of fun, but man, she is great. She knows her stuff. The only thing I need to announce, you guys, is that the Adult Chair workshop in Nashville is sold out for July, but I will be in New York in October and Charleston, South Carolina in January. And you can still get $100 off both of those workshops. So just go to theadultchair.com/events for more information on either of those. And the other thing is, I have a very special gift for all of you. I am gifting everyone, because it has been such a freaking hellacious last 6 months. It's been difficult for so many of us. And so many of you guys have written in and inquired about, what can I do? I need help. I don't know how to process these emotions. I'm overwhelmed. This month in the membership, we are doing a whole month on feeling emotions. And anyone that is new to the membership, I am gifting it to you for the month of July. So go to theadultchair.com/membership. And if you have not been in the membership before, put in the promo code free member. That's one word, free member. And you get to try the membership for free. And you can cancel at any time, of course. But you guys, this month in the membership is all about emotions. When we are filled with this much fear, we don't want to feel our emotions. And you know, I had posted something on Instagram quite a while ago, and people were writing in going, I don't know how to feel my emotions. So I decided in the membership this month, we're spending a whole month, I'm teaching you how to do it. It's almost like a mini course in feeling emotions. When we feel our emotions, we alleviate anxiety. We alleviate depression. There are a million reasons why we need to learn how to feel our emotions. And I'm teaching you exactly how to do that. So come join in the membership this month, the month of July, theadultchair.com/membership, promo code free member, one big word, no space. All right. We're going to jump right in to the October episode that I did with Sylvie. I know you guys are going to enjoy this. She is amazing. Enjoy. Today, we're talking to Sylvie Kakousian. She is a fabulous woman on the inside and out. I just love her. We met on Instagram. It's amazing the people you can meet on social media. And we met there, and I just loved her work. And we clicked right away, and we had a beautiful show on attachment. So today we are talking about attachment in relationships, boundaries, trust. We talked about shame, all of it. We had a really great conversation. You're going to learn a lot from the show today. Sylvie has a long-running love affair with helping struggling couples create real connection. She has a master's degree in psychology, marriage and family therapy. And growing up in the USA as a young immigrant from the Middle East, Sylvie has always been fascinated by the critical role family cultures play in intimate relationships. She really, really knows her stuff. It was an absolute delight to have her on. We had a lot of fun, but boy, we got into some great conversations about attachment. I really believe you're going to love the show. So without further ado, here we go with Sylvie. Welcome, Sylvie. I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on. It has been. We were going to do this months and months ago, and you're finally here. So I'm delighted to have you on. Welcome to the Adult Share Podcast.
Thank you so much. I've been counting down the days as my end too.
I'm so happy to talk with you about attachment theory because this is huge. It's been blowing up over the last few years. I love attachment and I feel like you're one of the attachment experts out there. So it's wonderful to have you today.
Thank you.
Let's jump right in to attachment. Let's start out with just a very basic question. Like, what is attachment theory? Like, why should we know what our attachment style is? Like, just talk a little bit about attachment.
Sure. So attachment theory, it was developed by a couple amazing beings, Mary Ainsworth, John Bowlby, then later Julie Solomon came into the picture. And there's a handful of people that are part of creating this theory. But ultimately, they started to map out the way that kids bond with their primary caregivers, whoever was responsible for emotionally regulating them and taking care of them. Mm-hmm. And they started to differentiate four different ways that kids develop these bonds. And those bonds are really helpful to start paying attention to and noticing because they become replicated in our adult relationships. Mm-hmm. So you have this. Do you want me to go into the four of them?
Let's go for it. Let's go for it. I think people need to hear about this for sure. Okay.
So we'll start with the foundation because I agree. I think that it's important to know what they are specifically. So kids that are more securely attached grew up with caregivers, and I know you know this stuff hand. They grew up with caregivers that were very present, attuned, very available emotionally when the child was, you know, reaching for them. And this doesn't mean that this happen all the time. And I think even in the research in Diane Poole-Heller's book, she says, as long as the parent was available 30% of the time, still enough. And that was mind-blowing. But what these parents were or caregivers were really good at is they were good at recognizing when they made mistakes. So when they didn't tune in and they didn't do a good job, they were able to go back and make those repairs, whether that's holding the child or, you know, offering comfort in the way that works for that particular person, for that particular baby. And that developed a more secure bond, and that creates somebody that feels more trusting in the world. They're a little bit more collaborative. They're giving their partners the benefit of the doubt in adult relationships. They're just more team players. And then I like to go along a spectrum because it's kind of like who's mostly bonded and who has the most attunement with the caregiver. And then the following one would be the anxious attachment. So this is somebody that had that connection and attunement from the caregiver part of the time. And then the other part of the time, the parent was not available or available in very invasive ways. And so a child is constantly confused, not knowing, okay, is my person going to be there for me or am I going to be left alone in this feeling? So they never really shut off they kind of stay in that almost like hyper aroused. The nervous system becomes activated really quickly when they're in adult relationships. So, you know, these are people that are hypersensitive to any kind of threats. They want a lot of a connection a lot of the time and sometimes can end up pushing people away. And then you have
They're anxious all the time. Yeah.
And it's so valid, right? All of these attachment styles, it's like they're all adaptation systems. Yeah. They're all ways we cope to survive. And without them, I mean, God knows where we would be, right?
Right.
So, and then we have somebody who has dismissive avoidant tendencies. And this is somebody that their parent or caregiver was really not available or even maybe shamed them for having needs. They are like the little adult. They had started taking care of themselves at a really young age. And they actually can shut down their emotions fairly easily because they're so disconnected from nobody's been tuned into them. As adults, you can recognize these behaviors in yourself if you are somebody that potentially doesn't think intimate relationships are that important, or you just don't really think needs are very important, or your partner's needs are very important, and you just really minimize, and you even might even have a little bit of an arrogant approach to self, about yourself, an inflated self. And then there's the fourth one, which is the fearful avoidant, which is also known as I forget, it's the, gosh, I'm blanking out. What is the other term for
disorganized?
Yes, there you go. Thank you. Because a lot of people get confused.
Yeah, I see that. Like, it seems like that fourth one gets named a few different names. So I always learned it from the disorganized attachment. But
yes,
I was wondering if fearful avoidant was, because I see that.
It's the same.
Yeah, I know. I figured that. So tell us about that one.
So that one is growing up with a caregiver that has a lot of their own unresolved traumas and losses that they haven't really coped with or dealt with. And so as a child is having their own needs and their own experiences, you might notice that that caregiver starts responding in fearful ways or even abusive ways. And really, you know, the child is still attached to the caregiver, but they're terrified of them at the same time. So it's like, this person is my person. They're, you know, my survival person. And they might even feel a lot of love. But when those fearful behaviors of the parents come online, it starts to create almost both the anxious tendencies and the avoidant tendency. So it's like, because a lot of times people ask me, I don't know which one I resonate with. First of all, you can resonate with all of them. These are, this is a theory. This is not a black and white thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's flawed. The theory itself is flawed. So it's like just noticing which behaviors we identify with within the map and working on those is where we really do the healing work.
Give us an example of the parents of a child or the parent of a child that would turn out to be disorganized or grow up to be disorganized. Because that is a confusing one. And I understand what you're saying. It's both anxious and avoidant. But give us an example of a parent if you could. Like, what would the parent be doing specifically that's so confusing to that kid? What's going on with the parent?
So let's say the parent was abused themselves or treated really horribly by their parent. And so they never really dealt with that. And so as soon as they notice something happening in their child that can be triggering them, they might respond in shaming ways or, again, abusive ways, the same way that they've seen it. I've also seen this in a lot in immigrant parents that have left their entire family systems behind and never had the chance to really grieve or deal with the losses, because, again, they just have to survive. And there's all these things are suppressed. And then so it comes out in like a frightening way. So maybe it's yelling at a child in a really inappropriate way, or just being really punishing and not really talking to the child about what they just did. So it's almost like they're kind of in their own world when those things come up for them. But other times they might be really loving.
So it's really confusing.
Yes.
Really confusing. Yes. I have a question. A little bit on a side note here. I don't want to go down this path too much, but do you think that someone that's anxiously attached, are those the folks that grow up to be love addicts, and the avoidantly attached grow up to be love avoidants?
That definitely is a lot of.
Do you find that? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If we're more anxious and if we feel hungry for love and deprived of love, it makes sense why we would be yearning for it in excessive ways. Yeah. And whereas if we have been, let's say, and people often don't understand the dismissive avoidant. They're like, okay, well, if nobody was really giving them love, you would think that they would be needy. But it's not, because they shut down.
Yeah.
And so anyone that comes into their space feels violating. It feels like, oh my gosh, I'm being imposed on. I feel like somebody's engulfing me and I'm being taken over. Yeah. And they don't know how to engage and co-regulate with somebody. So absolutely, somebody become avoidant of love, and somebody can become hungry and really pursuit of it, but in really unhealthy ways where they're not really paying attention to those red flags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. I think about that a lot. I'm like, it just seems like they would all go kind of become these people in adult life. Okay. So let's talk about attachment in relationships.
Let's do it.
Because I know people go, oh my God, I'm an avoidant, or I just realized I'm in a relationship with an avoidant. So let's talk about, give me an example of what that looks like. Like, if I am, whether I'm secure, let's talk about this. If I'm in a relationship with an avoidant and I'm secure, what that looks like in an adult relationship. If I'm secure and someone else is avoidant, what does that look like?
So the beautiful thing about being in a relationship with somebody that has a lot of secure tendencies is that we have a lot to learn from them. We have a lot they can model a lot of healthy behaviors. And so And it's, you know, what's helpful about the attachment style is that we can start to externalize those behaviors. It's not that I'm avoidant, I'm anxious. It's like, I have a lot of anxious tendencies, especially when I'm wanting connection, or I have a lot of avoidant tendencies when connection is coming towards me. Yeah. And so when we're with somebody secure, you're going to start to notice the pattern when the secure the person with more secure tendencies wants connection. Perhaps somebody that has more avoidant tendencies is starting to back off and pull away. And if it's really severe, then, you know, the person with more secure tendencies, I feel like I'm holding two puppets right now. They'll call that out. They'll be like, hey, I notice every time I'm trying to reach for you that you pull away from me. That doesn't work for me. Let's find a way together to really have both of our needs met. What do you need? This is what I need. So they don't shame you. They're really bringing forward the problem, but they're bringing it forward in a way that's very collaborative and win-win oriented. Whereas if that person, that more avoidant person, is with someone that has high anxious tendencies, the anxious person is going to potentially do something that's going to push that other person away even more.
Because they're reaching, because they're anxious. So they're reaching, reaching, reaching. And yes. you can tell that we're ethnic because we're using our hands. I've got the Italian. I'm like, oh, sorry about that.
This is our puppet show.
I know, it's a puppet show going on right here. Anyway, so the anxious person is reaching, reaching, reaching. And the avoidance, like, no, stay back, stay back, stay back. How do we help these people? Please enlighten us on that one. How do we, like, what do we do if we say, oh my God, I'm anxious and I'm in this relationship with an avoidant. What do I do now?
Yes. So the biggest thing is becoming aware of these habits or these patterns that have served us for a long time, that there've been adaptations, and yet we start to pay attention to, okay, am I satisfied in relationships? Am I happy with the way I'm showing up? And really, you have to be somebody that wants to see this, right? And you have to come onto yourself. So if we're partnered up with somebody that is not shaming us and they're really bringing forward these patterns of ours in ways that they're saying, hey, I really want to work on this because I want our relationship to succeed rather than you're really avoidant and you're doing a really shitty job and I need my connection and you're not giving it to me. Those are two different responses. One is going to bring forward someone's defense and the other one has the possibility of softening it. And I say possibility because it still doesn't guarantee that that person is going to want to work on themselves. Right. So the first piece is, am I willing? Am I willing to notice the patterns? I've been in relationships maybe 3 or 4 times. If I'm more avoidant, I'm the one leaving usually. So obviously I'm always leaving. I'm the common denominator. Are all my partners really bad? You know, so you start to over and over. And I think that's part of why we kind of need to be in a few relationships so we start to see ourselves more clearly. Yeah.
I just want to say this. I want to point this out for people listening is we have to be willing to look at ourselves and say, wait a minute. I love how you said awareness. I say this all the time. It's about awareness. Like, wait a minute. Instead of saying my partner keeps leaving me, they're bad, right? And we point and we go, oh, another one left, another one left. They're all jerks. They're all whatever. We have to at some point go, wait a minute. Do I have a part in this? Like, what is it about me? Could it be that something inside of me that's creating the end of this relationship? And we have to start doing this in relationships or just in life in general, but not pointing the finger because it's not about blame or judgment, but just looking at self and saying, wait a minute, maybe I'm avoidant. And if I am, or if I'm anxious, maybe I'm pulling too hard. Maybe I'm reaching too much because I've had a lot of boyfriends that have said to me, I'm too much. I'm overbearing. Is that me or is it them? It's me. Okay, so then what do I need to do? I want you to keep talking about what you're just saying, but I do want to get to the healing too. I want to really go there too. Like, what do we do for in these relationships? Keep going though with what you're saying. Sorry.
Yeah. No, and I think what you're saying is so important. It's that self-reflection and awareness of those patterns. And we can easily say, well, they just couldn't handle all of me, or, you know, it's like, yeah. we have to be willing, if we constantly push people away. Look, is there somebody that can love that about us? Of course. But along that journey, it's also important to start reflecting on what are some ways that I can bring healthier behaviors into the picture? Mm-hmm. Or at least how can I communicate the tendencies that push people away or that blocks connection from happening?
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example that might help to.
Please. That'd be great. Forward. Yeah. Yeah. Please.
So I have a lot of avoidant tendencies. And, you know, a lot of the attachment style also, there's a lot of research that says our first intimate relationship plays a huge role in affecting our attachment. So for people listening, it's not just your childhood. It's also, you know, your adult relationships. It's the cultural context. It's the social context. It's if there's other mental illness or physical things. Well, there's just so many things that can contribute to this. Mm-hmm. And so in the beginning of my relationship, I would make threats to leave all the time. And it was something that I did. I got away with in other relationships, and it was something that I needed to be called out on. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the way that my partner did it was, again, it's almost like he detached himself from what I was doing, but he still brought it forward and really framed it in a way that made me see how hurtful what I was doing for our relationship, rather than just for myself and what I was potentially. And I got to see how much it was hurting him. Mm. And I think I was at the point in my life where, again, I had seen the pattern so much that I couldn't lie to myself anymore. So there's also that. I wasn't that innocent in my own self-awareness.
Yeah.
And so what I had to really get is like, okay, pulling away has been the pattern and that hasn't worked. I started to lean into the relationship. And as I leaned in more and more, I started to feel the relationship anxiety that I had been avoiding all these years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it's almost like as you do the opposite, as you do the thing that's going to have you heal it, it's going to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Super counterintuitive. It's almost like you have to meditate through, especially for people that have more of the avoidant or fearful stuff. You kind of have to just meditate through all those intrusive thoughts and things that are coming up in your brain, trying to convince you that this person is not right for you. When you actually lean into that feeling and get to the other side, you start to feel safer and safer. And your brain's like, oh, there's no danger here. It's actually okay.
Yeah. And learn how to be in the body and feel what the heck is going on.
Amen.
We don't want to feel that stuff, you know? So we just push away and go, nope, 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 nope. And we live in the mind. So
absolutely.
That's really, so you turned your relationship around by doing that.
It took a long time. There's still, you know, there's still moments where I feel that urge to run, but it has nothing to do with my partner. It has to do with the things that our relationship is triggering in me that I sometimes feel like are too overwhelming to deal with. And the part of me that's like, I can't tolerate what I'm experiencing. I can't tolerate this level of intimacy or commitment. So let me pull out. And again, now when it happens within us, I say it in a way, like if we're in the middle of an argument and I threaten to leave the room, I come back right away. Whereas before I would linger, like, I'm so sorry. That's not okay. I'm not going anywhere, you know, and really comforting his attachment wounds, which are, you know, very different than mine. You know, he has, so we find someone that perfectly mirrors usually.
I know, isn't it beautiful?
It's magical.
Damn it. It's always about healing and having a transformation and a learning opportunity.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? I mean, absolutely. It's about our souls here just to keep learning, learning, learning. And sometimes I'm done with that learning.
Very often I'm done with that learning.
Yeah, like, can I be done and just be securely attached and happy and have nothing to work on? No.
Can we just play and nothing to work?
Right?
Yes.
Okay. That's a beautiful example. Thank you for sharing.
You got it.
What about anxious attached? Because I hear what you're saying. So avoidance need to lean in, like really lean in.
Yes.
And stay.
And keep their feet on the ground.
Yeah. Like at least 1 foot. Don't go anywhere. What if I'm anxiously attached? What would you say to somebody that realizes, and I want, again, people that are anxiously attached, reach, 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 like text, 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 you know, call, call, call. And if we don't hear from that person, the anxiety level goes through the roof. Like, what do we do if we're anxiously attached?
So, you know, I like to say that both people that have anxious tendencies and avoidant tendencies, both have beautiful strengths. You know, the avoidant has they're able to take care of themselves. They know how to give you space. Whereas somebody that's more anxious, they're usually so loving and warm and caring and want to be connected, right? That's beautiful. Yeah. And yet, whereas somebody avoidant needs to learn how to co-regulate and almost become reliant on others, somebody that's more anxious needs to learn the skills to regulate themselves more internally. So not relying on that external so much. I mean, if they're partnered up with somebody that is not triggered by their anxiety, wonderful. And there's a lot of people that aren't, that are just really stable, that are really secure. And if they need that check-in every now and then, they can give that to them. But it's still going to be beneficial for them to learn skills. Cognitive behavioral therapy is fantastic for people with that higher anxiety because it helps them to challenge their fear-based thoughts. Like, this person is going to leave me. Okay, if we were doing that kind of work with someone to challenge those thoughts, am I sure they're going to leave me? Am I 100% sure? What's the evidence that I have that this person is going to leave me? What happened? So helping them to start thinking underneath just that one core fear of I'm going to be abandoned and starting to really think about it differently. Also working with a coach or a therapist, having somebody other than your partner that can help you regulate. Because what happens is that person needs that experience of safety and consistency over and over again for a period of time. And then they're able to start to do that for themselves. It's amazing how somebody regulating us then gives us the ability to do that for ourselves. It's truly incredible.
I agree. I've had that experience and it's truly amazing. Yeah. How we can just turn that nervous system down with someone that's really securely attached. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And they can sense it because they're usually going to be drawn to people that are not that, because again, they're playing out that same childhood stuff. Like, oh my God, this person is going to abandon me. And they're attracted usually to people
exactly.
that have that.
Exactly. Like if we had that avoidant parent and we're anxious because of it, we're going to attract an avoidant partner because it's what we know. In fact, when we meet them, I've had clients that have walked in, they're like, I found my soulmate. I'm like, tell me about your soulmate. I'm like, oh my God, they're avoidant, just like her mom. You know, it's like, it's the same thing. We're going to play it out because it's our healing. We have to do that. So it just feels like something we've known in the past. And it is.
Very, very familiar.
Yeah.
And you know, the beautiful thing is it's like, it doesn't matter who we pair with. As long as both people are willing to see their unhealthy behaviors, we can create agreements regardless of who we're with.
Yeah.
Like, but it takes both people really being honest about those things, about what are the things I do. Mm-hmm. So for the anxious person, they have to be willing to say to their partner, you know, sometimes I'm really intense, or sometimes I approach you in ways that is not sensitive to your experience at all. I make it all about me. Yeah. And what I'm just feeling desperate. I'm just feeling really needy, but I know that that's not okay for me to really be boundaried on you, on yourself almost.
Yes. Yeah. And what the other thing I hear you saying is like healthy communication. I say this all the time. You've got to know yourself and then you got to be able to tell your partner what you're all about and what you need. And we don't do that well. Like, we don't speak up for ourselves. You know, we instead react instead of expressing, hey, this is what I need. I don't want to leave that. I want to talk about boundaries, but first let's talk about this. What about the disorganized person? Like, can I add something to your anxious attached person?
Please.
Grounding. Mm. Grounding. Like the anxiously attached person, I think we all need to ground, frankly, but really that anxiously attached person that's like, again, reaching, oh my God, they're going to leave me. What did I do wrong? And they go into the mind. It's like, bring it down, slow it down, and ground. Like, let's get back in the body. Would you agree?
100%, because what you're saying is it's bringing the person to the present because they're so future focused.
Exactly.
Anxiety is future focused. This person is going to leave me.
Yes.
They're going to do this thing that might or may or not even be close to the reality. But when you ground it, it's like, oh, everything's actually okay. I'm here. I don't have to be thinking over there.
Mm-mm, no. What about the disorganized person? Again, it's a little bit of anxious and a little bit of a sprinkle of anxious, which is me. I can say that and laugh about it because it's me. I'm not making fun of anybody. That's mine. Yeah. So tell us if people are listening that feel like, oh my God, I'm disorganized. I'm both. What would you say to them? What's our healing?
I'm curious if what I'm going to say is going to resonate with your experience.
Okay, let's hear it.
You got to tell me if what
let's
I'm saying is helpful. Well, you know, somebody that has that disorganized, it's like, again, it's that push-pull. I want the relationship. I want that closeness, but I'm terrified of it. As soon as I feel close to someone, you know, they can often feel like they're being used. They can feel like they're being taken advantage of. It's almost like they can live with this fear of terror at times.
For sure.
And so again, it's questioning that anxious part. Is this actually happening? Like, you know, sometimes I'll tell my partner, I feel like you're taking advantage of me, you know? And it's like, the guy hasn't done anything, you know, but like, it doesn't match at all what I actually think he's doing.
Yeah.
And so being able to, again, question the validity of our fears and to feel those feelings, right?
100%.
Because a lot of those feelings under a disorganized attachment is a dysregulation, that ability, not only is a caregiver terrifying you, but they're not helping you then to regulate those feelings. So you're like trapped and you're cut off from part of yourself. And then it all comes up when you're intimate and beginning to really depend on someone. So working with someone is pretty important for this one, because it's really hard to manage your own feelings when you're going to shut down, shut them off right away, or they're going to just become too overwhelming to deal with for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So really, I think this one in particular really needs someone that's going to hold that space as you start to process some of those painful memories really slowly and start to just to start to assess whether or not this is a safe partner. Because if you're more fearful or disorganized, you might be drawn to people that are abusive or that are, you know, that might be scary to be with or hurtful, you know?
Right, right. I think
that resonating?
Not, that does for sure. I haven't attracted those people, but I did. I was the girl that was like, I'm in love. I broke up. I'm in love with the same, you know, and it was like, break up, get back together, break up, get back together. Now, thank God I've been married 22 years. So that's not happened. But I think getting married and having a child, something clicked in my brain and I was like, oh no, I'm staying, but holy moly. When it gets too overwhelming, I'm like ready to walk out the door and then I'm back as well. But I'm much better now because I've worked on it for many years. But I think that your advice is spot on there. Talk about, you were going a few minutes ago on boundaries. So talk to us about how the importance of boundaries while we're, again, realizing what attachment style we are and then in the healing of these attachment styles to become securely attached. Talk a little bit about boundaries.
Well, boundaries is a huge topic, but if we kind of merge it with how they can support the attachment styles map, is recognizing what kind of boundaries each style resonates with more. Mm-hmm. So if we have more secure tendencies, and again, I want to say that we can be 90% secure and still have some anxious stuff to work through it. And there's no perfection in these, right?
Yeah.
I screw this up all the time in my relationship. I'm constantly being avoidant or sometimes anxious. Like I have all those things, but I'm just repairing those things quickly and I'm not beating myself about them like I used to. So please, please, you know, I want people to not put themselves in a box and just to be really fluid and gentle with yourself. Because again, I get so many messages from people that are like, I'm this and I'm this and I don't know what to do. And it's like, it can be a little bit too boxy.
Yeah. And it can be really overwhelming for sure.
And totally. And we're overanalyzing ourselves and then we become really heady. And
We want to get them out of their heads, like get out of the head and come on down, get in the body.
Come to the body,
please.
So, you know, people that are have more secure tendencies are usually more solid about boundaries. They're more contained in themselves, but they're able to really engage and interact with people and respect their boundaries. Whereas somebody that's maybe more anxious is not really sensitive to other people's boundaries. Again, because they want that connection so much, they will cross into someone else's space and it can feel really insensitive and invasive because it's all about self, me, 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 right? Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody that's more avoidant, they're not used to being engaged as a child. They're not used to being, nobody was really curious with them. So they're very self-contained and they can sometimes have really rigid boundaries that actually block them from having connection with other people in the way that they want. So starting to pay attention to whether our boundaries are serving us or they're actually getting in the way of the kinds of relationships that we want can be really helpful and can be paired with certain attachment styles really well and exploring it that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does actually. That was really good. Talk a little bit about shame. How about that? Why shame can get in the way of building trust again? How about something like that? Talk
can
about
you
shame.
A little more about what specifically?
Yeah. So I think about shame and the shame we may have with some of these attachment styles, or the shame that we ruined another relationship. You know, shame's going to come up for many, many reasons. And then how do we trust ourselves? How do we trust the next person that comes into our lives? Like, how do we rebound or repair after shame, and then feel like we can reach out and trust again in relationships?
Let me sit with that for a second. So shame is an interesting thing. Shame is an emotion that comes online fairly young, as you probably know. Mm-hmm. And depending on how well that was regulated will greatly affect how well we regulate that feeling as an adult. And
pause. Yes. Can you expand on that? So it came on very young. What would create shame in a child?
So when we're a baby, we don't know the difference between ourselves and our mother, you know, the person taking care of us. We think they're us. It's the same person. It's blended, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we start growing developmentally, I don't know the exact age. I don't know if it's 1 or 2 years old, is when we start taking those bigger risks. Maybe we're now trying to jump off the couch and doing things that we're not supposed to do. Mom or, you know, caregiver has to watch out for us. And so they start to have to say the word no. And baby doesn't like the word no. And the baby is starting to realize, oh my gosh, I'm not, when the mom says no, the child starts to see, I'm not connected to mom, or they start to see themselves as a separate entity. You'll see their shoulders kind of come down, their head starts to come down, and they start to feel that feeling of shame, which can be very disorienting. Mm-hmm. And if the parent is not doing a good job of then comforting the child after saying no and helping to regulate that feeling of shame, then that child might grow up into an adult who really struggles with that feeling anytime. And they might be a perfectionist, somebody that really is terrified of making mistakes because they had to live in that feeling of shame, which is probably one of the most excruciating emotions to experience.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And I often say, so if you're somebody that hasn't really dealt with that shame regulation and you haven't had that proper regulation, one of the defenses against shame is anger. It's changing the subject. You ever give someone feedback about something or tell them something hurts you and they immediately change the subject or they just can't take responsibility at all?
Yeah.
That can be somebody that's really struggling with shame. And because they don't know how to cope with what you're saying and be with that, they kind of move to another place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, making space for that in an adult relationship when you don't have that regulated well is extremely hard. And it's one of the hardest things to tolerate in yourself.
So what's the repair for that? How would you, and does that lead to a certain attachment style, or is that just shame period? And it could be any attachment style.
It could be any, but it makes sense how more of the fearful disorganized would have more of that. Because if anytime we're being abused, it's going to create enormous shame. You know, I'm not just, my mistake is bad. I'm bad.
I'm bad.
Being hit. I mean, that's what message is a child going to receive from that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Healing the shame in adult relationships, shame came up quite a bit with me and my partner because I had been shamed even in work environments. So and one of the things that you can do is just turn to your partner when you're feeling the shame and just asking them to hold you. So not with a lot of words, you know, just asking for them to hold you and helping to slowly regulate. I remember my therapist told me once, she says the emotion of shame takes about, gosh, I think she said 25 times to regulate. Doing that repeatedly over and over, every time you feel that experience of shame, you might have a disorienting experience, but really, I mean, of course, doing a group, working with someone and having shame experience come forward and having people respond in really loving and gentle ways, being really careful with who you tell your stories to, especially if you struggle with shame. Because of course, if I share it with somebody that is not very sensitive, that's going to make me feel more shame. Is that helpful?
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, thank you. That really is. Wow. This has been like jam-packed.
We jammed it.
Lots of great, like really great tools, tips. This is what I love, tools and tips and help for people that hopefully now they can understand a little bit more about attachment and what style maybe they are, and then what they can do if they're in these relationships. Is there anything else you want to add about attachment or shame or boundaries or anything?
Just be really gentle with yourselves, you guys. I mean, this is recognizing some of our hurtful behaviors and unhealthy behaviors can trigger shame, you know, can make us feel sad and remorseful for the past. And like looking back and thinking, wow, knowing this, I could have done this so other things so differently. And that's part of life, you know, yeah. And it's really easy to beat ourselves up about this stuff, but really encouraging you guys to just use these as a tool, not to be perfect and not to make yourself perfect, but just to start being a little bit more collaborative and just noticing the things that are stopping you from receiving the kind of relationship and being in the kind of relationship that you really want.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah. Don't have shame over an attachment style, please, or anything unnecessary. I think of people going, oh my God, that's me. And now I'm damaged. No, yeah. Absolutely not. Okay. How can people find you, my dear? What if people want to find you and learn more about what you do? And do you have anything going on that you want to share and tell us anything at all about you?
Thank you, Michelle.
Yeah.
I would say Instagram is the place that I share the most free content. I try to upload something daily, whether it's attachment related, boundary related, or just relationship tools. And I can send you the link for that. It's my name, Sylvie Kukasian. And then I also have a boundaries program. I don't know if anyone is interested in something like that. I can, you know, we talk about how to really own your boundaries, how to set consequences with people that are not really hearing us, but also how to be present to somebody's shame. Let's say when you set a boundary, you know, again, it's like really taking care of your partner too, and not just having boundaries for yourself, but really to be able to do it in more of a relational and connected way.
Beautiful. I will put all of your links in the show notes at theadultchair.com in the podcast tab. I'm going to put all of your offerings, how they can find you. That's how I found you, by the way. I want to let everyone know Instagram, because I love your Instagram account. So go follow her for sure. I'll put all the links in the show notes. But thank you, my love. This was so great.
Thank you so much. My favorite part was our hands talking to each other.
I think so too. The puppets going back and forth. Thanks so much for joining us, though. You are a wealth of information. So.
I'm Thanks so for being honored, on today. Michelle. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right, you guys. Told you. Sylvie and I had an absolute blast on this show. We are definitely like-minded people and soul sisters for sure. That's all I've got for you today, though. But don't forget, if you want to join the membership for free this month, go to theadultchair.com/membership and put in the promo code FREEMEMBER. And you get it for free this month of July. It's my gift to you guys because, man, it has been a difficult last 6 months and I want to help you in any way. And the most important thing that we can do for ourselves right now is feel our emotions. So there you go. I love you guys. I will see you seated right here next week in the adult chair.